Hello everyone! Today we will dive much deeper into NumPy, focusing on array methods, functions, but also a tiny bit of math. Well, probably more than just a tiny bit. So we will begin with a quick recap, and we will then move on with some detailed examples and handy tricks. If you're new to this channel, welcome to Python Simplified, where I, Maria, share helpful programming tutorials with everyone. And this one was highly requested, so let's begin. And we will of course begin by importing NumPy as np. And then we can go ahead and use it to create an empty array. We will simply type np.zeros, to which we will pass a two-dimensional shape of 3x3. We can then go ahead and assign it to a, and we can move on with filling it with some actual values. Now, so far, we've learned how to do this by specifying the name of the array, followed by a set of square brackets, where we will select all the rows with a colon. Then we can go ahead and assign all these values to 2. So now if we print a, we see that we have generated a two-dimensional array with 3 different rows and 3 different columns, where all its values are equal to 2. Perfect. Now similarly, we will create an additional array, this time we'll call it b, and we'll assign it to np.arrange. And here we would like to create a sequence that starts from the number 1 and ends right before reaching number 10. We will then add, reshape this array, so we will add a reshape method where we will specify the exact shape of a, so 3x3 once again. Then we can print b. And once again, we are dealing with a two-dimensional array, but this time all our values are different from one another. Now, one thing you may have noticed is that A has a bunch of dots in it, so it sure looks like we're dealing with 2 different data types. So let's verify that. And we can do this by accessing the dtype attribute of both our arrays. So we will type a.dtype, and we will do the exact same thing with B, so b.dtype. Once we rerun our code, yeah, our guess was right. A deals with floating point numbers and B deals with integers. So let's make sure we are consistent here. So I'm just going to convert A by using the dtype argument and setting it to np.int64. Cool. Now if we rerun this code, beautiful. Both our arrays now have the exact same data type. Now this pretty much summarizes everything we've learned in the previous tutorial. So if you're not sure what we've done here, definitely check out my ultimate guide to NumPy arrays first. Okie dokie, let's move on. And once we have created our demo arrays, we can then go ahead and apply all kinds of methods on them. And we will begin with a fill method, which is given by a.fill, to which we will pass a numeric value. So let's go for 8. And before we run this code, let's quickly comment out the print statement of b, because we don't really need it at this point of time. And beautiful, we can see that fill, just as it sounds, fills the entire data structure with the value we specify inside the round brackets, which gives us a really nice alternative to the previous command I've showed you earlier. Now, keep in mind that the fill method applies the changes in place. That's why we don't need to reassign this expression back to A, it's being reassigned automatically. Now, alternatively, we can achieve very similar results with assignment operators. So what do I mean? We simply type the name of the array, followed by a plus equal symbol, followed by 3, for example. And we can run this code. And once we do that, we have increased all the values of a by 3. And same goes for the minus equals operator, as well as the times equals operator. However, watch out from the divide equals operator, because it's a completely different ballgame. Now you would assume that this command will fill our entire array with 2.6s, right? No, because if we run this code, we are getting a very nasty error in return. One that somehow deals with data types. Now we can clearly see that the error is triggered by a divided equals 3. However, the root of the problem is not over there. It is actually 2 lines of code above. It's right over here. So when we created A with some very specific instructions, we have committed to only store integers inside A. So now that we're trying to push a bunch of floating point numbers into A, NumPy prevents us from doing so. Wait a second. NumPy is a Python library, and Python is a very abstract language. When did you ever see an error that was triggered by storing a floating point number inside an integer variable? Well, if it looks like a C language error, if it is triggered by a C language problem, are we still dealing with Python here? Not exactly, because NumPy is written in C. So yeah, we are using Python commands. Our instructions are given in Python. However, they are implemented in a completely different language. They are performed with C. However, unlike C, where you need to be very strict all the time, NumPy gives us the option to be very ambiguous as well. So what do I mean by it? If we now delete this data type specification, and if we rerun this code, we are back in business. Our error is gone. So we basically take all the benefits of C, we combine them with all the benefits of Python, and this is how NumPy was born. Cool? Now let's move on with some more array methods. We can get the sum of all the array items by specifying the name of the array, followed by dot sum and an empty set of round brackets. We can now assign this expression to array underscore sum, and we can print it right below. And before I run this code, I just quickly want to show you that I reverted A back to store integers, and I also filled it with twos. So we are back to the original array we had earlier. Cool, now let's save everything and let's run it. And beautiful, we can see that our sum is 18, which makes a lot of sense because we have 9 items and all of them are equal to 2, and 9 times 2 is 18. Perfect. But we are not exactly limited to calculate the entire array. We can actually calculate each of the rows and each of the columns separately. So how can we do this? Let's quickly copy this line of code. And if we'd like to get the sum of each of our columns, we will simply specify the axis of 0 inside our method. Now, if we run this code, I should have chosen different numbers, but yeah, basically we get the sum of each of our columns. Okay, now it's a bit hard to tell with A, so let's quickly revert it to B. Now let's also print B instead of A, switch between them. Okay, and we can verify that this is indeed the sum of the columns, because 1 plus 4 is 5, plus 7 is 12, 2 plus 5 plus 8 is 15, so everything adds up. Now alternatively, if we want the sum of each of our rows, we simply specify axis 1 instead of axis 0, and now if we rerun this code, see, we have 1 plus 2 plus 3, which is 6. We then have 4 plus 5 plus 6, which is 15. So perfect. Everything adds up as well. But the only problem is specifying some kind of a number inside a method is not very informative. It's hard to tell exactly what this number represents. So the way to solve it is to simply add the axis argument in front of 1. And there you go. Now our colleagues will understand exactly what 1 means. Now, another thing I should mention, this axis argument is consistent across many different NumPy methods. So most of the methods I'll be showing you today, you can either apply them on the entire array, you can either apply them only on the rows of the array or only on the columns. It's entirely up to us. Next, we will get the product of the array by typing b.prod, which is basically multiplying all the items by one another. We will then assign it to array underscore product. And once we print it, we can either verify that this is the correct result by using a calculator. We'll just multiply 2 by 3 by 4 and so on. Or we can quickly change B to A, which is easier to verify. And once we rerun the code, we are dealing with 512, which is indeed 2 in the power of 9. Awesome. Now we can also get the average or the mean of an array with b.mean. We will assign it once again to a corresponding name, so array average. And once again, we can verify that the average of array b is indeed 5. Awesome. Now next, I'm going to show you a few methods to find the minimum and the maximum values of an array. And as you may guess, it's just as easy as typing b.max and b.min. Yep. We will then assign them to corresponding names. And if we print them right below, we see that the maximum value of our array is indeed 9, okay, which is given to us by b.max, and the minimum value is 1. Amazing. Now, in some cases, we would prefer to get the index of the minimum and maximum values instead of the actual values. So in that case, we will use a similar method. We will use b.argmax as an argument max and b.argmin. Now, I'm going to quickly assign it to logical names. And once we print the results, we can verify that the maximum value is stored at index 8 and the minimum value is stored at index 0. Now, the last minimum and maximum method I'll be showing you today is called P2P or peak to peak. Okay? And it's given to us by b.ptp. Okay, so what is this mysterious method? Let's print it first, and then I'll show you what it is. Okay, we are getting 8. Well, it can mean all kinds of stuff. Now, in the case of P2P, what it actually means, it's b.max minus b.min. That's it. So if we now reassign it back to peak, there you go. This is 8 once again. Now, what if we'd like to flatten an array? Or in other words, instead of having rows and columns, we would like to arrange the data in a single line. Well, in this case, once again, we have a few ways of doing so. So the first option is to call the reshape method on B and to pass the b.size attribute into it, where b.size returns the length of the array or the total number of items. We can then assign it to array underscore flat, and let's see the results. And beautiful, we are now dealing with a one-dimensional array instead of a two-dimensional one. Now, alternatively, we can also use the flatten method with b.flatten, which is much more informative than the previous one. And in this case, we don't need to pass a thing into those round brackets. So let's go ahead and quickly reassign it back to array underscore flat. Let's verify it works. And beautiful, there you go. We are getting the exact same result. Now, alternatively, we can also use the b.ravel method. Wow, there's so many of them. And if we reassign them to array flat, the results are exactly the same. So what's the difference? Well, array.flatten makes a copy of the original array, in this case b, while array.ravel creates a view of the original array. And we talked about those differences in the previous tutorial, but just a quick recap. If we are trying to modify the values of a view, for example, with array underscore flat plus equals 5, we are not only applying the changes on the view array, but we are also applying the changes on the original array. So if we are now trying to print B, we have actually modified the original array as well, not just the view. Next, we will talk about the repeat function, which just as it sounds, deals with repetition. So we will first create a new variable called array underscore repeat, and we will assign it to np.repeat, where the first argument represents the value we'd like to store, which in our case, that's going to be 255, and the second argument represents the number of repetitions. So in our case, let's go for 3. We'll try to mimic an RGB color. Let's quickly print it below. And once we do that, we get a completely flat array in the length of 3, where all its values are equal to 255. Awesome. So this gives us a nice alternative to the np1s and np0s functions. It's just that here we are allowed to store any type of value we'd like. But this is not the main purpose of repeat. Instead of repeating specific values, we actually use it to repeat entire arrays. So if we now replace 255 with b and we rerun this code, we get a completely flattened version of B where all its values repeat 3 times. Okay, but what if we don't want a flattened version? What if we'd like to get rows and columns? Well, did you already miss the axis argument? We will just add it to the end of our function. So we'll type axis, and if we'd like to store our values in the same row as the original ones, we will specify the axis of 1. Okay, 1 is rows, 0 is columns. And beautiful! Now our rows repeat each of our values 3 different times. Now if we'd like to do the same for columns, we'll simply switch 1 to 0. And now we are storing the repeating values in the same column as the original ones. Awesome! Now the beauty of repeat is that it has an opposite function. It has some sort of an inverse, which is given to us by np.unique. So now if we pass array underscore repeat into this function, and we also specify the axis of 0, because it must match if we want it to be the exact opposite, we will then assign it to array underscore unique. Let's quickly print the results. We have now canceled all the repetitions, and we are dealing with the original array once again. Now, another cool function, which I must show you guys, is given by np.diagonal, which, just as it sounds, fetches the diagonal of an array. So let's do this for B, and let's assign it to array diagonal. And once we print the results, we are fetching 1, 5, and 9, which is awesome. But we are not limited to the main diagonal. We can actually specify an offset argument. And if we set it to 1, for example, we are selecting one diagonal above the main one, which is 2 and 6. And if we specify minus 1, we will select one diagonal below the main one, which is 4 and 8. Awesome. Now let's see some conversion options. And we will first convert our array B into a list by using the toList method. We will then assign it to my underscore list, and we can then verify the data types below. So we'll first print B is, to which we will concatenate the type of B. And next we will print my list is, and we will concatenate the type of my list, of course. And beautiful, we have successfully converted our NumPy array into a regular Python list. Now, alternatively, we can also store arrays inside a file. We will simply use the b.toFile method, where the first argument represents the name of the file. So let's call it my underscore array.txt, which is a text file, of course. And we will then add another argument of sep, as in separator, and we will set it to a comma, in my case. Now, if we run this code, we will see a new file popping up in our file system. And if we open it, this is the B array separated by commas. Now, the next few operations are dealing with transposition, which is swapping axes or flipping rows with columns. Now, the first way to do so is by using the np.swapAxis function. And keep in mind that this time we are using E, because we're talking about many axes, not one. Now we will pass the first argument of B, which is the name of the array we'd like to transpose. And next we would like to flip axis 0 with axis 1. We will then assign it to array underscore swapped, and we will then print it right below, because it's very important. Otherwise, how will we know? And once we do so, we see that our rows have suddenly turned into columns, and vice versa. Now, another way to achieve the exact same result is by using the transpose method. So we will simply type b.transpose, and we will then flip axis 1 with axis 0. Now let's go ahead and reassign it to array swapped. Yes, I did mean transpose. My apologies on the typo. And yeah, once we rerun the code without the typo, we are achieving the exact same result, as I promised. Now, the last way to do so is the easiest thing in the world, and it's using an attribute. So we'll simply type v.capital T, and that's it. Wow. Okay. We will then reassign it to array swapped, and let's verify that it's doing the same thing, because for now it looks like magic. I don't know if you believe me. And there you go. Hold on. Is it the bottom? Yeah. We are achieving the same result with a single character. Holy smokes, you guys. So whenever you see this T, this capital T attribute, it actually means transpose. Good news, everyone. We are done covering array methods, even though I skipped a bunch of them, but you can find the full list inside the documentation. And I'm including the link in the description, of course. So let's quickly have a look. Now, the first thing we find is the full list of attributes that arrays have. So for example, here's the transpose attribute, here's the data type, and here's the size attributes, which we are very familiar with at this point of time. Now, in addition, we can also find a list of methods and functions which we can use on arrays. Now, some of them are very familiar, for example, fill and flatten, but some of them are brand new. I mean, what is dumps even mean? Now, just because these methods exist doesn't mean that you'll necessarily find them very useful. However, if there's something you're struggling with and I didn't have a chance to cover it, please leave me a comment below and I'll be able to include it in some future NumPy tutorials. It's just such a big library that it's hard to cover it in one go, okay? So let's quickly go back to our code and let's talk about operations on two matrices or two arrays. Now, the first operations I'll show you, I think all of us are familiar with, so we will just call it simple ops. And the first thing we'll do is we will add matrix A to matrix B, okay? That's why I told you that most of us are familiar with it. It's just super simple. Let's just verify it works. Beautiful. Actually, let me make the text a bit smaller so we can see the results a bit more vividly. And we can see that 2 plus 1 is 3. We can see that 2 plus 4 is 6, and so on. Now, similarly, we can also subtract. We can also multiply. And we can also divide, okay? So let's just wrap it in a set of round brackets and let's divide it by 4, okay? If we save this code and if we rerun it, we are getting a completely different result and you can verify that with your calculator. And again, this is something that all of us are familiar with. We all know basic Python and all the basic arithmetic operations are applicable on matrices as well. Now, in addition, we also have slightly more complicated operations, which is what we will focus on in the rest of this tutorial. So the first slightly more complicated operation is called modulo, and it is given to us by a percentage symbol. So first let's see the results of B modulo A, and then we will discuss the formula. Okay, and there you go. So it seems that every odd number in B returns 1, while every even number in B returns 0. Right? Because we see that 4 returns 0, 8 returns 0, 5 returns 1. So what's exactly going on here? Well, the modulo operator deals with remainders. So for example, if we divide 1 by 2, we would get a fraction in return, which means that we would also get a remainder. So we can either say that the result is 0.5, or we can say that the result is 0 with a remainder of 1. So it's just two ways of conveying the exact same thing. While on the other hand, if we divide 2 by 2, we do not get a fraction in return, so we do not have a remainder. That's why when it comes to 4, 6, and 8, we are always dealing with a remainder of 0. Now the next slightly complicated operation is called floor division, and it is given to us by a double set of slashes. But how exactly is it different from regular division? Let's quickly have a look. So we will first print B divided by A, and then we will print floor division. Okay, and we see that in 50% of the cases, our results match. We can see 2 is 2, 4 is 4. But in the other 50% of the cases, our results are different. So half turns into 0 and 1.5 turns into 1. So what's going on here? Well, floor division helps us avoid fractions or floating point numbers. As we've seen earlier, in some cases, we are not allowed to store non-whole numbers inside an array. So floor division gives us a really nice solution. We are basically rounding down the fractions to the nearest whole number. So a half turns into 0, and 3.5 turns into 3. So we can actually say that floor division consists of two operations. The first operation is the regular B divided by A, and the second operation wraps the results inside a floor function. So in order to do this with NumPy, we will simply type np.floor, and there you go. This would be the equivalent of the above command. It's just that the floor division operator is a bit more elegant. However, the function is probably more informative. Now let's go ahead and reassign floor division to the new value, and let's see if there's any difference in the results. And okay, we see that the results are pretty much the same, it's just that this time we are dealing with floats. All of them are whole numbers, we do not see any fractions, but their data type was converted probably by the floor function. I'll need to check that. So I'll just leave a comment saying this returns integers and this returns floats, but both of them are doing the exact same thing. Now the last operation I'll show you today is actually more complicated than just slightly. And that's because so far, we've been dealing on operations on the elements of a matrix. So let's quickly print an example. So we took all the elements of matrix A and we have multiplied them by the elements of a matrix B. Okay, let's save it. Let's see the results. So we took the element of 2 and we multiplied it by the element of 3, and this is how we got the element of 6, or the item of 6. So our operations were on individual elements. However, this is very different from multiplying an entire matrix by another matrix. In those cases, we use a completely different formula, which is much more complicated, and you can clearly see it on the screen. Now, I'm planning to film a detailed math tutorial about this formula because we will need it a lot for machine learning and for artificial intelligence. But in the meanwhile, I would love to show you guys how it looks like with NumPy, okay? How we can achieve the results of this formula with some code, okay? So right above our print statement, we will use the np.metmul function, as in matrix multiplication, and we will pass matrix A and matrix B. We can then assign it to matrix multiply, and let's quickly compare it to the regular multiplication from earlier, and that way we will see the real difference between the two. Okie dokie, and yeah, we can clearly verify that these operations are very different from one another. So in the first case, we are dealing with an element-wise multiplication, and in the second case, we are dealing with a matrix-wise multiplication. Now, there's more than one way of achieving the exact same results. We can also use the dot method to do so. So we will type A dot dot, as in dot product, and we will pass matrix B inside. Now, this is slightly less informative than the above function because matrix multiplication is kind of literally saying what we're doing, while the dot product, I think that only people who really like math will understand the context. Now, let's quickly verify that we're getting the exact same results with our dot method. And yep, there you go, we got it. Now, alternatively, we can use even a nicer shortcut, okay? We'll simply type A at B, and that's it. Okay, so yeah, this is not very informative, but once again, this is elegant. I like it. If I'm working alone on a project, right, it doesn't really matter if I'm using an at symbol or matmul. But if I'm working with a team, yeah, sure, I'll probably use the function instead. And as usual, if you didn't feel like typing along, you can always clone the complete version of my code from the link in the description. And I've even included all the formulas and all the graphics you've seen in this tutorial, just for reference. You can copy it, you can use it in whichever way you'd like. I don't care if it's for school, I don't care if it's for your personal use or for commercial use even. Use it as you'd like. My graphics are your graphics. And thank you guys so much for watching this ultimate guide to NumPy arrays. I hope you are much more comfortable with NumPy at this point of time. And if you are, please share it with the world. Now, if you'd like to be extra awesome, you can always leave me a like, a comment, subscribe to my channel, and turn on the notification bell. I'll see you guys very soon in a brand new Tkintar tutorial, so I hope you missed GUIs, because they're coming right at ya.